Hi, welcome to episode 452 of the Fantastic Forecast. I'm David Elliott. And yes, I had an Ashley Madison account, but it was only for using it to promote this podcast. Some podcasters use Facebook and Twitter. I use sex sites. Today, the 452nd issue of the Fantastic Four. It's Fantastic Four Volume 3, number 23, from November 1999. Skull Session by Chris Claremont and Salvador La Roca. At a courtroom in San Diego, Dr. Reed Richards is appearing before a judge, along with his lawyers, Jern Hogarth and Matt Murdock, to defend himself against charges that the Fantastic Four instigated a riot at the San Diego Comic-Con. This would not be the last time the Fantastic Four would cause a riot at the Comic-Con. 16 years later, footage of the Fantastic Four movie, Fant-Fourstic, would cause similar rioting among outraged comic book fans. Reed stands up to address the court, explains that while the Fantastic Four were at the center of events at the Comic-Con, and that is a phrase that may never be uttered again, they were not the cause of the events that transpired that day. And we cut to a flashback of those events to see comic book writer Chris Claremont and artist Salvador La Roca witnessing a giant brawl between the Fantastic Four, the Avengers, and a group of armed gunmen. Reed explains that while the whole thing really started back in New York City, with Ben Grimm, also known as The Thing, Jennifer Walters, also known as the She-Hulk, and Bounty, only known as Bounty, the three of them have been locked up in these glass tubes filled with yellow liquid. They look like they're posing for a Robert Mapplethorpe photo, while Reed tries to find a cure for the potion given to them by the absorbing man that turned them into rampaging lunatics. But the cops are there, and the district attorney figures that the three of them are dangerous and should be locked up, much to the chagrin and the protestations of the rest of the Fantastic Four. Later, Reed and Alessandre look into the guest bedroom, and when Valeria traveled back in time to 1999, her bedroom traveled with her. So the guest bedroom now looks like the bedroom of a teenage girl. Oddly enough, she has a poster in her room for the movie Armageddon. So if she's a teenager, she's most likely from the years 2015 to 2020. Now, what teenage girl in that time frame would have a poster for the movie Armageddon in her room? And there's a Lara Croft poster. Or maybe it's a poster of Justin Bieber. I can't tell. Reed theorizes that the warehouse headquarters is a tesseract, a cube whose fabric exists in time as well as in space and is expandable in both. They couldn't just pick an ordinary warehouse, could they? They had to move into a tesseract. He picks up a CD that belongs to Valeria. Do girls here in the second decade of the 21st century still use CDs? And the CD is a soundtrack to a Star Wars movie. Yeah, a Star Wars movie. Maybe it's Episode 7. People don't know this yet, but instead of using John Williams, J.J. Abrams is using the music of Ariana Grande and One Direction to score the movie. For real! They continue to snoop around her room, and Valeria has a sailing trophy. This is the final straw. I do not like any kid that has a sailing trophy. That's too much. That's too much. They find a wedding photo of Dr. Doom and Susan, which is also very unlikely. And looking around a bit, Reed comes up with another theory, that maybe Valeria is a figment of Franklin's imagination. Well, she is a figment of some delusional moron's imagination, that's for sure. Reed figures that if Franklin could create an entire world, as he did with Heroes Reborn, why can't he create a sister? Back with the Thing, where he's in that glass tube, Franklin is in the room playing with his dog, while Valeria is sitting on this machine that allows her to examine Ben's cellular structure. And she finds tiny robotic nanites in his body. She figures that these robots are what is causing Ben to go crazy, and says that they need to flush the robot bugs from his system. Franklin looks out the window, this room is underwater, and he sees a blonde Atlantean woman named Marita, and suddenly her clothes change and she swims away. And Franklin is surprised, and he says, "Wow!" He tells his dad when his dad enters the room, and Reed replies, "Fascinating, he saw it too." Valeria tells Reed about the nanites, and that she tracked their source. They come from a former subsidiary of Stark Fujikawa, located in San Diego. Franklin tries to tell his dad, "There's a big storm coming. It feels real, real bad." And Reed says he knows, but first, They need to go to San Diego to help Ben, Jennifer, and Bounty. And after that, they'll save the universe. You gotta have your priorities in order. Go to the Comic-Con first. Save the universe second. So later, at a hotel in San Diego, Johnny flies into the room where Alessandre and Franklin are waiting. Johnny tells Alessandre that she looks gorgeous, and she replies that they got work to do, and they better get to it. If Johnny wants to get Alessandre into bed, he should wait until Franklin is out of the room, and wait until after they save their friends and the universe. So later, at a manufacturing plant for U.S. AMRID, the rest of the FF, along with Valeria, who seems to be leading this mission, are breaking in, and they find the place looking like it's deserted, as its manufacturing processes seem to be fully automated. A process developed, no doubt, by Tony Stark, putting hundreds of people out of work. So, you know, this is odd. This is a story that Reed is telling to a court of law, and he includes part of the story where he and his team commit the crime of breaking and entering. Reed goes to tap into the computer systems, and Valeria decides to have a look for herself as well, but she gets a blast of orange smoke at her face, a gas full of nanites that starts to envelop her. She pushes the cloud away with a force field, and Reed carries her back up into the ventilation shaft. It's funny how in movies, TV shows, and comics, people always find these giant ventilation shafts they can crawl through. So Reed has what he needs, and then they have the dog teleport them away. Meanwhile, at the convention center, Johnny is there with Alessandre and Franklin, and they're trying to decide where to go first. They've got comic book dealers, artists doing sketches, people in costumes. Johnny, oddly enough, not in his costume. And I'm sure a lot of the stars of the big upcoming movie releases of 1999 were there promoting their films. I'm sure there was an Inspector Gadget panel, maybe showing some footage from Eyes Wide Shut, and the shit demon from Dogma was giving out autographs. And Johnny notices a group of cosplayers called Skull, the sinister cabal for the undermining of life and liberty. And they've got realistic-looking guns. Now, this was before 9/11, when you could show up at a comic book convention dressed up as a group of gun-toting terrorists. Out by the Marvel Comics exhibit, a group of Avengers led by Captain America show up as special guests of Marvel Comics. And Johnny notices the cosplayers dressed up as the terrorists get a little nervous. And the reproduction of the Mad Thinker's awesome android comes to life. It turns out it was actually the Mad Thinker's awesome android going to the Comic-Con, posing as a cosplayer going as Mad Thinker's awesome android. The robot comes to life and starts smacking Johnny around, and then the guys with guns shoot at the Avengers, spraying nanite-filled gas at them, putting all the Avengers, except Wonder Man, who's composed of pure energy, under their control. And so a fight breaks out between the Human Torch, Wonder Man, and the mind-controlled Avengers and the android. And then the rest of the Fantastic Four, along with Valeria, teleport in, and they join the fight. Valeria manages to take down the awesome android. Reed has come up with a device, with Valeria's help, that creates an electromagnetic pulse that deactivates the nanites and returns the mind-controlled Avengers to normal. Valeria and Sue team up to smack the awesome android so hard with their force fields, it goes flying off into the Pacific Ocean, splashing down near an aircraft carrier. When the FF travel out to go find the android, the aircraft carrier starts firing lasers at him. And we see on the deck a pair of dastardly villains, the Mad Thinker, of course, and his new buddy, the Red Skull. Of course, considering that the group of terrorists were calling themselves a Skull, maybe it's not such a surprise that he's there too. The Skull chastises the Thinker for not killing the Fantastic Four with that pulse beam. The Thinker, always one to make excuses, says that he didn't anticipate the FF would have a fifth member, Valeria, with attributes similar to the Invisible Woman. Next, it turns out that this isn't any old aircraft carrier. It is a stolen aircraft carrier hijacked from S.H.I.E.L.D., and so it takes off and flies away. And back in the courtroom, Reed finishes his story, explaining that the manufacturing plant has been seized by federal agents, and all the victims have been cured of the nanite infections. The Avengers and the Fantastic Four have assisted in repairing any damaged structures. And by assisting, I assume Tony Stark and Reed Richards paying out huge sums of money. Even though, compared to most issues of the FF, there seems to have been very little damage done to the city. But I'm guessing New York is more tolerable to those kinds of things than San Diego is. So after hearing all this, the judge decides to dismiss the case against the Fantastic Four, but goes on to ask if Reed has any plans for dealing with the Red Skull and his huge weapon of war. Reed assures him that everything that can be done is being done. But Reed's lying. He's really thinking that they have bigger problems to deal with, And besides, let Captain America deal with the Red Skull. That's his arch enemy anyway. And so the issue ends with Reed cryptically thinking to himself, how can I tell him that a storm is coming, the likes of which the universe has never known, that may very well destroy everything in existence, and worst of all, I don't have a clue how to stop it. I assume he's not talking about Y2K. Maybe something else. If you have a question about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. You can download other episodes at iTunes or find them all at www.podcastff.podbean.com. So long, kids, this podcast is over. I took the 405 and drove a stake down into your center and stated that it's never ever been better than this. I hung my favorite shirt on the floorboard, wrinkled up from pulling, pushing, and tasting. Sing the truth. That keeps me thrown askew.